Brothers and sisters, the question of how many people will be saved has fascinated people throughout history, up to and including our own time. Recently on my Facebook page, a Catholic blogger from Rochester and a seminary professor from the seminary I attended got into a debate over this question. They were essentially rehashing a debate between Father Robert Barron, now the rector of Mundelein Seminary, where I attended, and Dr. Ralph Martin, an associate professor at Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit. The blogger cited St. Alphonsus Liguori as well as referenced Augustine and Aquinas in arguing that very few people are saved. The seminary professor cited Catholic moral teaching as well as an encyclical letter by Pope Benedict XVI to argue that we may hope that many, if not most, are saved. What I found fascinating in this discussion is that while it's natural for our human curiosity to be piqued by the question of how many people will be saved, this question is in fact the wrong question to ask. You know, by way of analogy, this would be sort of like walking into peak performance and asking Brian Hathaway, how many people will get fit? Now, while I don't want to put words into Brian's mouth, my guess is that he'd tell you that you are asking the wrong question. The question that you should be asking is, what do I need to do to get in shape? And after all, what difference does it make if 99% of the world is in shape if you're in that 1% that's out of shape? Well, similarly, Jesus' response to the question about how many will be saved demonstrates that the crowds were asking the wrong question. While it may settle some academic curiosity, the task at hand focuses not on how many will be saved, but how to be among those who are saved. Hence, Jesus responds to the question by saying, strive to enter through the narrow gate. For many, I tell you, will attempt to enter, but will not be strong enough. In other words, Jesus is telling us that salvation is not easily attained, and therefore we need to spend our energy striving for holiness, working to beat hell, as I like to say. Jesus' response could lead us to fall into despair. In fact, in St. Matthew's Gospel, when Jesus informs the disciples that the path to salvation is as narrow as the eye of a needle, they ask in desperation, Lord, who can be saved? Before we fall into despair, observe that Jesus didn't say that the path to salvation is impossible. He said that it's narrow and that it's difficult. Just as the path to getting into shape is narrow and difficult, demanding a lot of energy and discipline, so too the path to salvation. Yet we're all here today, presumably because we want to be saved. We want to enter and embark upon that path to salvation, right? By a quick show of hands, how many people here today want to be saved? Good, it's pretty much unanimous. Now let me ask another question. What does it mean to be saved? What does it mean to go to heaven? Anybody? Don't everybody? I asked the same question last week at St. James and St. John. I got the same blank stares from everybody. Because everybody knew they wanted to go to heaven. Nobody knew what it was to go to heaven and what heaven was. Friends, let me propose this. Salvation, heaven, is where we go to enter into complete and total union with God. And notice it works that we enter into union with God, not the other way around. You know, so often we want God to change to be like us, but it's actually us who has to change to be like God, because we know that God is immutable. He's unchanging. As Scripture says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so if he doesn't change, if we want to enter into complete and total union with him, then we have to change our lives. We have to conform our lives to his. Go back to that fitness analogy that I was talking about. You know, we can't become fit simply by changing the definition of what it means to be fit. We can't just change the standards of fitness and say, okay, well, now I'm in shape because I've changed what it means to be fit. No, what we have to do is we have to find true models of fitness. And then we have to change our lives. We have to eat healthy. We have to exercise. And then we can become fit. Well, the same is true for holiness.
If we want to be holy, we need to conform our lives to the true standard of holiness, which of course is God himself. So we need to change our lives to become like God in order to grow in holiness, in order to be saved. I want to share with everybody here something that's been weighing on me for the last week and a half or so. A week ago Thursday, we celebrated the solemnity of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, a day when our Catholic faith obliges us to come to Mass in order to celebrate as a community. And I was somewhat spiritually unnerved by the number of people who didn't attend Mass. You know, by my estimates, about two-thirds of the congregation didn't attend Mass on that day, meaning that only one-third made it to that narrow gate. And as a priest, I know that I'm going to be held accountable for how well I lead people to holiness. And so I don't want to go up to heaven and have God say to me, "Well, Father Brian, you noticed this problem. What did you do to resolve it?" And I say, "Gee, nothing." I don't think that's going to fly very well. So I want to talk about this. And what I did to get some advice is I went to the source for all advice. I went to Facebook. And so I posted on Facebook and I said, "What do we need to do to get Catholics to take the tenets of the faith seriously, to get them to grow in holiness? What can priests do?" And I was surprised. I got about over 50 responses to this question on Facebook from all sorts of people, from parishioners here at Blessed Trinity and St. Patrick, from parishioners from my former parish, seminary professors, got into the discussion, bloggers, all kinds of people entered into this discussion. Some of them addressed the question that I asked, which is, how do we get people to grow in holiness? How do we address the issue? Others just gave excuses and said, "Oh, here's why I missed Mass," or "I forgot about it," or something, which really wasn't my question. And the reason I asked this question wasn't to condemn people, but it was really to understand how, as a priest, I can encourage people to grow in holiness. And while most of the comments did focus on reasons why people may or may not have attended, there was a few responses that focused on something I think was an important issue. And this was, a lot of people didn't know the church's teachings on holy days and on Sundays. A lot of people didn't realize that the church considers it a grave matter for sin to miss Mass on an obligatory day. And the reason for that is we shouldn't focus on, you know, the obligation, but when we come to worship, we worship as not only individuals, but as a collective body, as kind of a family. And so just as it's important for a family to gather to celebrate feasts around certain members, you can think of weddings, graduations, things like that. As a community, as a church, it's important for us to gather to celebrate these great feasts, these great holy days. And a lot of people didn't know that. And so I said, okay, well, this represents a failure on the part of priests to educate people in the faith, to call people to holiness, to lead people to that narrow gate. And so I said, I think that's one starting point for me, at least. I'm going to start there. And so when we celebrate these events, it is important for us to recognize that, you know, we do come together as a family to celebrate these feasts. And so we shouldn't view it so much as, oh, I'm obliged to go, but as a day of celebration. But I also want to go back again to that fitness analogy. I keep going back to peak performance here. And talk about this in terms of our holiness. You know, when we have these rules in our faith and these obligations, I like to make the analogy to kind of what a trainer does. When I'm at peak performance, I see the trainer there a lot of times getting people to do all these exercises that to me look quite torturous and strenuous and things like that. Now, I know the people that Brian Hathaway hires aren't masochists, okay? I know that they're actually there trying to get people into shape. And so they're telling them, you know, come on, one more rep, you know, do this. You know, it's going to be good for you in the long run. It's going to get you into shape. Well, see, the same thing is true with God and the church. When we receive commandments from God, when we receive these obligations of our faith, it's the God's way of saying, you know, this is what you need to do to get in shape spiritually, to become a people who are holy, to make it through that narrow gate. Remember, Jesus says that we need to be strong enough to make it through that narrow gate. Many won't be strong enough. Well, the way we get strong is by taking the tenets of our faith seriously and putting them into practice and trying to grow in holiness day after day. And see, then, once we get strong, there's a second part of this, which is you have to stay in shape, too. You know, just as it doesn't do anybody any good to say, well, you know, 5 years ago I got into shape, I was eating healthy, and so now I don't go to the gym anymore and I just eat donuts all day. You know, it's not really helpful for you. You can't say, gee, I'm in shape anymore. Well, the same is true with our own sense of holiness. It's important that we continue to go and practice our faith day after day to stay in shape. Because otherwise, you know, what's going to happen is we're going to fall out of shape. We can say to ourselves, well, you know, I've gone to Mass for the past 50 years, so I don't need to go today. But it doesn't work like that. You know, we'll start to fall out of shape the minute we adopt that attitude, and then we'll find ourselves too weak to enter through that narrow gate. So it's important that we not only get into shape, but that we stay in shape once we're in there. So we should be constantly, every day, trying to say, how can I grow in holiness? You know, Christ always calls us to new levels of excellence. He never tells us to settle for mediocrity. He's always calling us to new levels of excellence. I think of the story of the rich young man where he comes and says, what do I need to do to get to heaven? Christ says, follow the commandments. And then he says, oh, I've done that. And then Christ says, oh, well, then let me give you one other thing to do. Sell all your stuff and follow me. These are ways in which he calls us to holiness. He's raising the bar on us. And that's what we should be striving to do. We shouldn't be focusing so much on how many people are saved. We should say, what is it I need to do to grow in holiness? What is it that I need to do so that I can be saved? Brothers and sisters, peace to you and to all who strive to enter through that narrow gate.